Good morning.
Morning.
We are very excited to have you with us today to worship together. I want to thank Roy for leading our singing this morning and doing an excellent job. Before we start our lesson, I want to mention something that I've mentioned several times in Bible class. There is a youth retreat at the end of this month. It's in Norman, Oklahoma. My brother-in-law, Casey Haynes, is the director there, and my sister, Hannah, will also be there. It's for grades 8 through 12th, and what it's called is GO, which stands for Gospel Outreach. And so it's a weekend about evangelism. One of the speakers there, the keynote speaker for the weekend, is one of my favorite. He does an excellent job. So if you'd like to go, I am going myself. So if you would like to go, if you're a parent or you want to speak to me about that, then please let me know. It's $45 for each person to go. There was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them came to his father and said, "Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me." And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring the fatted calf and let us kill it and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." The phrase "prodigal son" makes us think of a young person morally adrift. A boy addicted to drugs. A girl living with her boyfriend. But immorality is not the only path to a squandered spiritual inheritance. There are many roads that a person can take into the far country. A religious prodigal strays away from the truth, adopting a faith condemned in the Bible. An indifferent prodigal loses interest in Jesus and his church. He is still morally upright, but he no longer loves God. According to Dr. Flavio Yakeley, a researcher at Harding University, 83% of Christian college students remain faithful as young adults. Of those who attend a public university, 49% remain faithful. Of those who don't go to college, 44% remain faithful. These are not just numbers. They are our friends, our siblings, our sons and daughters, our grandchildren. And their prodigal journey breaks our hearts. But the good news is that the prodigal often comes home. This fact is central to the parable, isn't it? And the forgiving father's conduct teaches us how to make our prodigal child's return more likely and more successful. In his book, Parenting Prodigals, Phil Waldrop makes five excellent suggestions based on the forgiving conduct of the father toward his son. Perhaps you're already in Luke 15, but if you're not, let's all turn there together. Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 13. Luke 15, starting in verse 13. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. Let's focus on that last phrase. And no one gave him anything. This includes the father. Notice that the father does not send a check into the far country to bail out his son. He doesn't send a sandwich or a bowl of soup. The father lets sin run its course. A parent's natural response is to rescue. This is still appropriate when a grown child is being mistreated or is in physical danger. I'll share an example with you. I'm going to change the names for the sake of privacy. When Scott learned that his daughter had been physically abused, he picked up the phone. Speaking with his son-in-law, he said, "Scott, or Michael, if you ever lay another hand on my daughter, then I'm going to get in my truck and drive to Tennessee. It's a long way, and I'm going to have lots of time to think. And when I get there, I'm going to be mad." As far as Scott ever knew, Michael never repeated his offense. But sending aid to my son or daughter when he or she is suffering the consequences of bad decisions, then I can actually frustrate the purposes of God. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 11 it says, "For the moment all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness for those who have been trained by it." Painful discipline trains. Medicate the pain and the lesson may never be learned. Number one, let sin run its course. And number two, erect no barriers. Verse 17. "But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.'" What gave the son the courage to return to a father whom he had so deeply wounded? The father had not closed the door on the relationship. A prodigal child inflicts a deep wound. The father says in verse 24, "My son was dead." When someone has grievously wounded me, lashing back is only natural. Your son is walking out the door. If you're going to leave like this, then don't ever come back. Can't you see what you're doing to your mother? You're not my son anymore. Lashing back is only natural, but it's the wrong thing to do if I wish for my lost son, my lost daughter, to come home. So number one, let sin run its course. Number two, erect no barriers. And number three, expect the child's return. Verse 20. And he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. The son is still a long way off, but his father sees him. I wonder how many days, weeks, months, years passed where the father was standing outside, scanning the horizon, hoping, longing, yearning that his son would come home. The father's expectancy meant that he was prepared for his son to come home. He had prepare his response. Losing hope in the return of a prodigal child can unintentionally thwart repentance. For instance, I lose hope that my son will come back to church, and I begin to think it's safe to share negative feelings that I have about my church family. The elders, they make bad decisions. The song leader, I think he's arrogant. Most of the members at our congregation are hypocrites. If I wish for my lost son or daughter to come home, comments like these must never leave my lips. We maintain our expectancy by remembering our prodigal every single day in prayer. By doing so, I say, Lord, I understand that you can do some things that I can't. Mark Wright, my cousin, grew up in a wonderful Christian family in Jefferson, Iowa. As a young adult, he quit attending church. He married Janelle, a girl with no religious background. And the two of them moved to Pennsylvania, far away from his mom and dad. After the birth of their first child, Brianna, Janelle decided that she wanted their daughter to be raised in a Christian family. They visited a congregation there. Janelle was baptized, and Mark was rebaptized. Today, Mark is an elder in the church at Jefferson. Surely my aunt and uncle, Earl and Marilyn, never quit praying that Mark would come home. But how could they have ever guessed that Janelle, of all people, would lead their son home? Never give up hope. God can do things that we can't even imagine. Number four, love unconditionally. Verse 20. And he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to his father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Dad, I smell like a pig pen. Welcome home, son. I still love you. You don't understand. I took everything you had given me and I... Now my pockets are empty. Welcome home, son. I still love you. Dad, you don't get it. I took everything you had given me and I squandered it in ways that were selfish and immoral. And besides, you don't know what I've done. Welcome home, son. I still love you. In his book, Parenting Prodigals, the author tells of a young man who, while addicted to drugs, murdered his own grandparents. How do you love and forgive a son like that? I don't know. But I do know one thing. Our Father in heaven would forgive a boy like that. Number one, let sin run its course. Number two, erect no barriers. Number three, expect the child's return. Number four, love unconditionally. And number five, make the prodigal's return a celebration. Verse 23. The father says, and bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. What does the father do? Welcome home. There's still a place for you here. Come closer so that I can hug you, so that I can kiss you. Quickly, he says to the servants, bring the fatted calf. I want you to take the very best that you have and give it to my son. I don't want you as a servant. I want you as my child. What does the father not do? How could you do this to me? Do you not remember our conversation from before? You're not welcome here anymore. This response is only natural, but it will only send my lost son or daughter back into the far country. Maybe you're here today and you're thinking, Josh, my child's a prodigal. Where did I go wrong? Can I offer you a word of encouragement? The father in this story does nothing wrong. He is the perfect father. Even the best parents can't control the decisions that their children make. And finally, did you know that I'm the prodigal in this story? So are you. In some of our older hymnals, there is an invitation song that says, God is calling the prodigal. Come without delay. Hear, oh, hear him calling. Calling now for thee. Come today, though you've wandered so far away from his presence. Have you wandered far away from the Father? Is he a fading memory in your heart and in your mind? If so, then know that the Father is standing outside. He is longing, hoping, yearning that you will come home, that you will be with Him. And if you do that, He will bless your life in ways that you can't even imagine. Perhaps you're here today and you have a prodigal child. And your heart is aching because of it. What we want you to do is we want you, if you feel the need to come at this time, and like the father in the story as he wrapped his arms around the son, that's what this church family, that's what we want to do, is we want to wrap our arms around you. If you have any need at this time, then please come as we stand and sing.